Welcome to The Endless Barrel, a podcast dedicated to unraveling the intricate threads of mental health, exploring the profound depths of the human mind, and shedding light on the often turbulent journey towards well-being. In each episode, we embark on a thoughtful exploration of the challenges, triumphs, and evolving narratives surrounding mental health. Join me as we navigate the labyrinth of emotions, share personal stories, and engage in insightful conversations with experts, advocates, and individuals who have weathered their own storms. On this episode, I'm delighted to say that we are joined by Laura O'Mahony. Laura is a stand-up comedian, a TV personality, and former DJ at Red FM, and of course, all-round fabulous human being.
Hello, hiya, Laura. Hello, how are you? Oh, former Red FM, we don't talk about that.
Right, we'll move quickly on.
We do, of course we talk about that. It's true, it's part of the fabric of who I am now, Keith. So
yeah.
Can't get away from it.
Right, we leave it till the end so I can just edit Perfect. It out and nobody will notice.
Perfect.
I know if anyone is obviously, if I put any clips of this up, Laura's looking fabulous today. She was on TV today and she's whipped out a Game of Thrones big throne behind her. That if anyone can notice that she's sitting on, there we go. Yep. Doesn't work quite well with audio, but I'm sure people will get the idea.
I'm always on a metaphorical throne in my head anyway. You must keep yourself in your throne.
There you go. Brilliant. I'm actually sticking that in the intro. I'm gonna redo the intro and putting that in it.
Perfect.
So Laura, come here, listen, tell me how you're doing at the moment. Obviously you said you're flying and you've got loads going on, and we'll go back a little bit kind of to your childhood and stuff like that. But at the moment, how are you at the moment?
Yeah, I'm great. Like, I suppose I'm always at a base level of quite, like, very, you know, very at peace, which is great, which is my kind of base level. But then I find that life stuff's pops in and out, unwelcome life stuff that you're like, oh, what are you doing here? For example, I was saying to you there that my dad has been unwell. And I suppose it's my first time encountering an unwell parent. And that, so while my base level of happiness kind of remains the same, it's like a life event comes in and kind of rests on top of it. And it's like, oh, you're here now. You're a part of my landscape at the moment. I hate you and I would like you to go away. But I suppose it's just the time of life that I'm probably moving into very reluctantly, struggling against the concept of anything happening to my parents. But they are both 70 and they are not without their health conditions. So I suppose I've been facing up to that since the summer, kind of. So that's the kind of dark cloud that is around, but mostly I'm working from a very happy base, which is, I mean, absolutely very lucky to be able to say that.
Yeah.
But this is the first big bit of adversity that I've faced now in a while, and I don't like it.
Yeah. Would you find that you have usually a fairly positive mindset anyway?
Yeah, I think, I mean, obviously you work at it, but I think positivity and kind of, without trying to be toxically positive, which is always a bit of a hard line to thread, but I suppose even in the face of something like my dad being sick, it's like, well, what are the tools that I have to kind of deal with it? I probably have crack and I probably have mischief. I probably have a good support system in my own, like my own husband and kids and stuff. And that's all I can bring to it, because otherwise I'd be bawling all the time. And I've done that. I've been absolutely very upset at the notion of anything happening to my dad. But I do think you have to... I don't think you have to be positive all the time. I do think you have to feel all your emotions as they crop up. I'm not one for like, oh, I'm not feeling that now. I'm like, I like to deeply immerse myself in whatever emotion crops up for me.
Yeah.
So like, I'm a crier. So it does help to just bawl a way out and just kind of... that helps me. It helps me. And to not be afraid of it. I sometimes see that with my little boy. I have a little boy who's 6. And sometimes he has an overwhelming urge to be like, I'm not going to cry. I'm not going to cry. And I'm like, should you cry, love?
Where do you think he gets that from?
I don't know. Probably from me going, don't cry.
Oh, fair enough.
No, I think it's... I think he wants, I think he probably wants to be strong, and he doesn't want to be, I think it's more that he doesn't want to show that he's upset. Now, we've always been like, of course you must cry and if you're upset, but it's I have wondered where it has come from, because he's like, no, I'm not going to cry. So we've, like, both of us have actively been like, no, crying is fine, you must cry. Like, he'd be very conscious of not crying in school. I'm like, cry away, boy.
Yeah,
you're in junior infants, like, they're all crying.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder, is it that even that whole idea of, and this is like, he's, you said he's six, and
yeah,
I wonder, is it like, you know, is someone, has he heard something about, because this thing I'm always talking about, masculinity and the image of men and all this type of stuff, and like, I probably cried 3 times in the last week, which is extreme the other way, and I'm exactly like you, where I'll embrace my emotions all the time, and I probably have people's head wrecked the fact that I embrace them really too much. But I wonder, has he got, like, maybe, you know what I mean, like, where he's just,
I do,
of,
and I,
I'm a little boy, I don't cry, or something like that.
And I don't know where they get that from, because even we'll say, like, in play school or whatever, there'd be a kind of a notion of, that's a boy's toy, that's a girl's toy. And I've always, if he's ever brought that home to my door, I'm like, excuse me, they're all just toys, my friend. So I wonder, is it kind of subconsciously, does it filter through to him? But I think people have they have a lot to be answerable for as well, because I've had another little boy, Freddie, recently. Oh, he's only 9 weeks old. But when I was pregnant with him, this very lovely, normal woman said to me, oh, boys now, oh, they'll be punching each other and this, that and the other. And I was so alarmed. I was like, what do you mean they'll be punching each other? I was like, my two boys are musical theatre boys. There'll be no punching. They'll be dancing Les Mis across the stage. But I was like, this notion that you'd say that for boys, but you wouldn't say it for girls. You wouldn't be like, oh, the two girls will be punching each other. What? Like, it's. I'm constantly trying to, like, and Alfie is a very, like, sparkly, lovely 6-year-old. He, you know, he's not this, like, you know, he likes dinosaurs, he likes trucks, but he's not in any way stereotypical. He equally likes the Eurovision and he loves K-pop, you know, so he is, like, he's a big mix of things. But I do often wonder, where is it coming from? Because it is not coming from me, and it is not coming from my husband, who is what I would call a sparkly man. He is
a
just
sparkly man, lovely.
We call him a sparkle straight, that he's like bait into Taylor Swift, but is still very much like, all, you know, he's like, he's a kind of a modern man, we'll say. So I'm like, where is Alfie getting this from? It's a kind of, it definitely is a society thing. I don't want that for him. And I think we all have I think we all have to kind of rally against, or rail against it a bit, for it to not just pass on from generation to generation. We eventually have to call a halt, I think.
And it is a generational thing as well, isn't it? Well, I brought my three small kids, which I don't know why I did it, because I knew it was going to be torture, but I brought them up to Smith's the other day just to kind of, obviously they weren't getting anything, but they were like, I'm just kind of going behind them with the camera, just snapping things that they like.
Yeah.
Time of year that it is.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, and I know this has been mentioned so many times before, but you kind of like get to the end and you look at one aisle and it's all pink.
Yeah.
And you get to another aisle, it's all blue.
Yeah.
And it's like, even my son, he nearly didn't even want to walk up the pink aisle.
Yeah.
Because it's all pink. Yeah. So it's nearly like they're already telling you that's the girl's aisle and that's the boy's aisle. And you get, like, it's like ridiculous, you know? There's no need for it. It is,
but sometimes I'm like, well, it's up to us then to make the boy go down the pink aisle, you know, as opposed to be like, oh, that's the girl's aisle. It's like, go down there, and if you want a doll, have a dolly. I often see people complaining about, like, slogan t-shirts and stuff that'd be in, like, the likes of Pennies, that would be like, you know, that the girls is all like, be happy, and the boys is all like, be tough or whatever.
Good
and I'm
point.
Like, yeah, but I'm like, but sure, you're the one perpetuating the boy and girl thing. Just go buy the one for
that's
the boys.
That's a good point, actually. I wore a t-shirt yesterday from the Barbie movie. Said, I am Knuff. You've probably seen it on my Instagram.
Yeah, amazing.
And I'm always wearing that. Like, it's perfect. Like, because it is. It's exactly perfect how I feel. Well, sorry.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
just like, as in, I never understand people whinging about it online. I'm like, just walk over to the section and pull it out and give it to the child. Stop telling them it's a boy or a girl section.
Yeah.
Like, and also, there's nothing wrong with them. Like, as in, my little girl is all about pink. Like, you know, stop demonizing it. Just whatever they're into, I think, be into it. Like, genuinely, Alfie is obsessed with Eurovision. He could tell you who won it 6, 7 years ago, he could tell you what country, he could tell you really niche songs that nobody else knows. And I'm like, let's just be obsessed with that. You know, I don't have to be like, okay, Alfie, let's talk about the GAA now. You know, like, as in just whatever they're into, be into it. And don't you attach a kind of a gender to it. I think is the way to go. Or just be like, my girl is a really like pink sparkly princess, brilliant, that's great. She's also a badass boss bitch, and that's great too. You just have to.
Well, I've got two little girls and they're exactly like that. I mean, one of them is
sassy.
One of them's mad into pink, but also she'll have her little jeans on today with the little rips in them, and she's you know, and she's they're amazing. And they're like, I actually know someone else who had a little boy had like a pink Barbie backpack. He loved it and he loves his colors, and I'd be like, I said, that's amazing, that's absolutely, I love that.
More of that. I think it probably is I think it probably is moving in, certainly in circles that I'd be in, it's moving towards like, you know, do what you want once you're happy, which I think would be good, as opposed to trying to enforce this era. As my kids always say, pink was a boy's color in the first place anyway. They've read that somewhere.
Have they? I didn't know that. Yeah. Okay.
Apparently it was like a boy's colour, and then the girls took it over. Yeah.
Well, let's just go with that then. Let's just go with
that. It sounds amazing.
Right. Look, before we just have a whole rant of a podcast here, I actually wanted to mention something you said a little while ago where you always asked you about your self-care and you were like, I have crack. And I'm like, have you? Do you want a type of crack? I was a little confused. I was like, have you got like a drawer there or something? That's a different way of going about it.
Crack and lols. That's all I've got.
the fun crack. Well, let's move on before I get myself in trouble here. Right. So I want to talk about social media and all that type of stuff because we were nearly going to go into it there. So I want to just go back a little bit because obviously you're hugely big into comedy and you stand-up comedy and you're a TV personality and you're always great fun when you see you on TV, and your social media, obviously I'm sure people know you on Instagram and your stuff. Yeah. You're always like, your stuff is comical on it. But like, if we go back a little bit to your childhood, so were you always kind of like that type of person, or, you know, did you kind of develop this kind of real bubbly positive personality over a while, or is it just something that has always been there with you? Because it is hard, and I know you said earlier on about being positive all the time, the toxic positivity, but I think there's a difference between positive all the time and just being kind of like, because you're clearly just being yourself.
It's interesting because I think I was always very I was the youngest of three, and I think the youngest gets away with, like, you know, they can be the crack a bit. So I definitely knew that my kind of place was the entertaining one, I think. Not that my brother and sister weren't entertaining, but that was kind of, I fell naturally into that role. But I was very shy, which doesn't kind of add up in my mind. Like, just initially kind of safe shy. So if a stranger came into my house, you know, a friend of my mom and dad's or whatever, I'd take a while to warm up to them. That kind of shyness.
Right.
And I also don't think, like, I did drama and theatre studies in college, but I don't think I actually was, you know, kind of acting and stuff until I was a good bit older, because I wouldn't have done myself justice a bit. I remember entering, I must have been in about third or fourth class, Fesh Matthew. It's a big thing in Cork. It's basically like a poetry competition, like score. You know, you go and you perform a poem, and then if you do well in that, you get to do the second poem. And like, I did a terrible job at that. And where I look back now going, like, it was because I was shy and I didn't know how to be a performer or anything yet. But like, in my day-to-day life at home, I was great crack, but it didn't kind of translate to the stage, I think, until way later. But like, then once I stopped being shy, like, once you were in my, you know, once you had my confidence, then I would be just all about the crack. Like, just, I think a constant desire to make people laugh is what has fueled me without being too arsy about it my whole life. I just want people to be happy and to laugh, and also to think I'm funny. Like, it's an ego thing as well. I don't want, you know, like, sometimes people are like, oh, she thinks she's so funny. I'm like, yeah, Yes, I do. Yeah, that's correct. Like
Yeah.
that's why I came to comedy. I didn't like rock up to it as in like, oh, I'm not funny at all. So it, but I do
Yeah.
have an urgent need to make people either laugh or happy or to fix them, which obviously sometimes the fixing is a kind of a lovely thought, but not always possible. And sometimes people don't need to be fixed, or sometimes the thing that's wrong with them is actually just part of their personality. It's not, you know, so I do have an overwhelming urge to kind of get out my toolbox and be like, okay, what's wrong? You know, how can I sort it? Sometimes people don't need that. People just need you to be with them, and you don't have to, there doesn't have to be an end goal of sorting them. So
Yeah,
that's, I
absolutely.
learned that as I go along.
Yeah, I completely agree. That's exactly what it is. And I suppose, and it doesn't, as you said about fix, it doesn't have to be fixing someone. It can just be an escapism for a little while as well, just to get you out of your own head for a while.
That's interesting that you say that, because obviously at the moment the world is grim in in lots of areas. And so I'd have people on to me kind of going, why haven't you like spoken out about, you know, obviously things that are going on in the world? And I'm like, because I understand and appreciate and hate what's going on, but my role in that is to be a safe space escape for people. Like, people don't come to my Instagram to see what my political views are, right? They come to be like, oh, what's Laura been at today? You know, like to get away, to get away. Even the telework that I do at the moment, the whole thing is that it's a fun Friday and it's a step off from people. And I don't think we all have to be stepped on all the time. Like, my head has all the horror shows in it that everybody else has, but my job in this is not to be ill-informed and speak out on a topic that I am not fully au fait with. My job is to just try and remind people of the light in the world. And like, I do wear that heavily. Like, I want people to come for an escape. I don't want it to be, you know, I want people to feel like, oh, I can, she's a safe pair of hands to make me happy.
But it's true though, isn't it? I mean, like
Yeah.
I kind of get that a little bit as well, people. Like, and I'm like, that's not what like you go tune into RTE. Don't come to me. I'll got my own things going on. I
Yeah.
kind of promote. I try and promote, positive, well-being and but body positivity and stuff like
Yeah.
that. And a lot of times people's their own, as you said, horror shows are in their own head and dealing with themselves,
Yeah.
not
And
what's going on around the world. Although, do you know what I mean? Some people are so, because I was like that for
yeah.
so long.
Well, I think as well, like, I had a baby 9 weeks ago. Okay. So at the height of that post baby, when you're very, very vulnerable, like so happy, but so emotional, there was people like sending me videos of stuff that is happening in the world. And I'm like, I cannot do that at the moment. And it's not a uncaring thing, but I've like friends of mine that'd be on Instagram and they'd be saying, you know, we all need to speak out, now is not the time to be silent. I know, but you need to speak out if you're informed and if you have something of value to say. And I don't think me speaking out is going to help. I do think me providing a place of light and happiness on the internet might make somebody's day a bit better. It's not going to end a war, but it might make somebody who is struggling with those images and videos and the weight of the world, it might make their day better. I can really only do those small things. I can, you know, I can sign petitions, I can get the word out there in other ways, but my job in the internet is not to be a political correspondent. And also, I do think you have to know when you don't have enough knowledge. Like, I am just I don't have enough knowledge. Yes, you can go get it, but I can't let my head go there at the moment because I have just had a baby. And I think people enforce stuff on you sometimes. And I feel like saying, in like in your DMs and stuff, I feel like saying, it's off. I've had a baby. My hormones are all over the place. I am looking at this tiny little boy, wondering how to protect him from the world. I have the horror shows. I don't need to see the videos, and I don't need you needing me to speak out on something that I've no clue about, really, when it comes down to it. Do you know?
Even if you had a clue about it, you're serving a purpose in a different way. You're speaking out in a different way. Do you know what I mean? So, and as you said, you're like, so you're providing or hoping to provide like kind of some joy and lift someone's mood up. That's just as helpful as you talking about the negatives, because sometimes people don't want to hear the negatives. As you said, just tune into the news and hear that. That's not, you have a different purpose.
And also, what's not helpful, I think, is people saying, oh, you need to speak out because I've spoken out. Look at how I've spoken out. Like suddenly weaponizing it as a, you know, like your silence speaks volumes on this. No, it doesn't. Or yes, it does. My silence is that I am at home freaked about the world and my babies and protecting them. So like, I think it's a problem with online presence in general, is that this feeling that we all need to have an opinion, a thought and a statement about everything. Like, pick your area. It's a bit like, you know, you're doing your Leaving Cert subjects. Pick your subjects that are your strengths. And my strength is certainly not like deep-seated political conflicts. Like, that's not my area. My area is fun crack at home and minding my babies. So like, and I don't think that that should be demonized. I don't think it's like, how dare you not speak out about the issues of the world? I can't speak out about everything. There's issues in the world the whole time.
But it can backfire on you too, issue. As well.
Of course it can. Yeah. Especially if you haven't a clue. And it's like, oh, you should become more informed. But to become more informed, I have to invite horrors into my life that I can't deal with at the moment. And you have to be able to say that you have to protect yourself a certain amount as well, or else the world would feel very heavy on you the whole time.
First of all, then you think about it, if you flip that around, right? So someone wants you to speak out and you start going on doing these speeches of kind of like, you know, condemning all of these things. You flip that to then say, is somebody like going on to some like political correspondence DMs, go hop on and tell a few jokes and cheer everyone up. Do you know what I mean? It's going to look a bit cringy. And if you start doing the opposite, it might look the same.
Oh my God. If like, if one of those like really important, you know, the one they have a podcast, what's like Zara King or any of them, they start to do like fun sketches. I'd be like, what's this?
It's not going to go down well.
Get out of my patch.
Yeah. Know your purpose and pick your audience. Like,
exactly. Exactly. And don't feel bad about it. No. Like, I mean, it's a bit like getting on to me saying, Laura, you need to speak out about climate change. I don't want to. It frightens the living shit out of me.
Just don't want to,
I have nothing interesting to add to the conversation other than basically going, ooh, you know, that's not great. Like, I just, it's not my field. It's not my field.
Listen, why we're talking about social media, I was going to come to, we might as well talk about it now because we kind of talked a little bit about it earlier on anyway. Like, you know, your negative comments, your trolls. I know we kind of, you spoke about them a little bit there, but more to, if you kind of explain how you deal with more kind of towards your stuff, or do you get them? I'm sure everyone does.
Everyone does. I don't have that many because I think my following isn't massive. I think if you were dealing with like hundreds of thousand followers, you would get more, obviously. I deal with them brilliantly when it is somebody else and not great when it's myself. So like, if somebody comes to me and tells me they're being trolled, I'm like, you stay away from them, you know, you don't worry, you're amazing. But for me, I instantly am like, oh my God, maybe they're right, which is terrible. Yeah. But my thing the whole time is like, when we were in school, if we were bullied in school, you were always told, you know, you tell on the bully, you speak up, you don't hide it, all of that. Now, as an adult, you're told like, oh, just ignore the trolls. No, I won't ignore them because they have come into my day. I could be about my business and they arrive into my day with an unpleasant comment. And if they're willing to do that privately to me in my DMs, then they should also be willing for me to publicly put it on my Instagram, because I'm like, no, you can't sit in your room and write shit about me or write to me to tell me that I am shit. without expecting it to go publicly. So I'm not going to sit there anymore and kind of put up with it. And I suppose like being kind of out of that was hard, slightly trickier to do when I worked in breakfast radio, because you know you're representing a company. I'm really only representing myself now, so it's like you can't do that. You cannot privately tell me I'm shit and not expect me to publicly publish that. And I do understand though, having dealt with trolls, that they are always coming with their own baggage. And it's, you know, the way you'd be like, oh, they're only allegiance or whatever. There is truth in that. And they're coming with their, you know, whatever is bugging them on the day. I find if you tackle a lot of them head on, that they back down straight away. Or there are people that kind of don't think you're real. They think they're talking to like a bot, or they think, you know, I would like anyone that has something negative to say about me to just say it at home in your kitchen. Like, just say it, but don't tell me about it, or don't write it somewhere. I think when it's written, it gets such power. Like, you know, there are toxic websites where people just tear down women online and stuff.
It happened to a friend of mine recently.
It's awful. But yeah. I don't want to know about it because if there's a page about me, I do not know and I do not want to know. I was bait into those websites reading them. And my mom gave out to me. She was like, Laura, what are you doing reading them? Because I saw something written about myself and I went down into an awful kind of like, oh my God, look at this shit. So I came out, I stopped, I haven't looked at them for about 2.5 years. And for my head, that is so good because reading them every day made me aware that these type of people existed. Not reading them makes me feel like those people don't exist. So if I get the odd troll comment in my DMs, it's a kind of a out of the ordinary occurrence. Whereas if I'm reading this toxic shit all day, every day, they're clearly coming with their own baggage, their own issues. I sometimes think people that troll me could, you know, it could be a vendetta against my parents who were teachers. Do you know what I mean? It could be like that they taught them. Like they were amazing teachers. So I don't know why they would have a vendetta, but I'd understand that a bit better as opposed to some random that just decides they don't like me. It's like, okay, but if you don't, like there's lots of people I don't like, I don't feel the need to tell them. Yes. I have that list. But you know, like you don't feel the need to say, just stay away from them. Just stay away.
I know. And those websites, I know exactly what you mean, but those websites you're talking about, or those threads or forums, or what I call them, like people could just put up stuff on them that's not true, that's made up.
Yeah.
And there's no regulation on it because there's people going on and reading it, and they're like, some people assume when they read something, oh, it must be true. I read it on the internet, it's true.
I think when it's written down, Keith, I think when it's there in black and white, it's because you're used to believing what you see written down, that you're like, that must be fact. Because I knew one of the girls that had a page about her and I was reading it going, I know that this is false because I know that.
I did it too,
But yet I'm like, oh, maybe there's some truth in it. I think it's very dangerous. I would like some sort of legislation to come in pertaining to those kind of websites in particular. Like there's one, the website is... only for negative comments. If you put a positive comment, you get taken down. Like, I mean,
really?
That's madness.
Wow.
Like, if you're like, oh no, actually, I really like her, bang, you're gone. Like, it's bizarre.
That's ridiculous. I mean, that's just insane. I mean, oh my God, I don't even know where to go with that one. Like, the friend of mine, she had loads of stuff about her put up, and she was in bits over it, and she had to go and try and clarify things on. And I'm like, my God, because there was a kind of effect in her business as well.
Yeah,
like
of course.
It's ridiculous.
Of course. And that's what they do. And like, I know it's, you know, you can say it's jealousy. And I think that is what it is. But if you're in the midst of it and you've got these people saying nasty things about you, oh my God, like they stick in my soul. Any negative comment I've ever had, I remember. And like, you know, I see amazing people that remember desperate things that were said about them. And I feel like shaking them going, but you're amazing. And like, this is a minority and they're weirdos. But it's like, it's an awful side effect. And then as well, people are like, oh, she should be able for it because she's putting herself out publicly. No, the reason you put yourself out publicly as a stand-up is for people to love you. It's because you're vulnerable. It's not like... I don't do stand up because I think I'm, you know, because I think I'm amazing. Like I come off a gig going, you know, like, did they laugh enough? Was it good enough? Like, we're
Right.
not super secure people. So, like, most people in the public eye that I've come across are not super secure.
I
They
know.
want the love and support. So this
Yeah.
notion that we should be able for it, are you joking me? We're not able for it.
And they're quite introverted. Like I know Fiona myself, and
Yeah.
one of them's like a good friend of mine, and they're quite introverted. They're
And vulnerable.
and vulnerable. That's a
Yeah.
really good word to use. They're vulnerable, very
And a lot of,
self-critical.
yeah, and a lot of comedians are no crack. Like a lot of comedians that you'd meet off stage, they're amazing on stage. And then they're like racked with doubt and sadness and sorrow off stage. They're the last people that are open to any sort of big criticism. It's just,
Yeah.
we really can't take it. But I often say, like, imagine if I went. When I was on the radio first, I remember a fella said to me something about good show now this morning. Yeah, you're really getting into it now, blah, blah, blah. And I said to him, imagine if I went into your job and said, very good there now with the plumbing. You're doing a great job with the pipes. You're finally getting the hang of it. And he suddenly was like, oh God, yeah. And I was like, you know, just because it's a public job, it really does not suit me for you to comment on it publicly. Like, you know, I'm not going to
Yeah.
go in and, you know, comment on a person's retail style, you know, oh, you could have sold that better. Like, what gives them the right? It bizarre behavior to me,
Yeah.
and I feel sad for them as well because, you know, there's obviously something in their world not right. Like if you're trying to tear me down, then it's possibly because you're quite unhappy with yourself, and I can say that at a distance. But when somebody is actually saying something nasty about me, I'm like, how could they do this? Are they
Yeah.
right? Oh my
Yeah.
God! And if they said anything about my husband or kids or parenting style or anything, then I would lose my shit. So I'm
Yeah.
best to not know. Don't read the comments. That's a top tip. Don't
Don't
read
re
the comments.
so we'll yeah, exactly. We'll leave it there with the social. Well, actually, no, before we leave there the social media, I wanted actually one quick question about it.
Yeah.
Do you find pressure with social media as in to put up content or to constantly have something going up? Or do you do it kind of like how you know how you feel at the time?
Well, I think I don't feel pressure to put up content because it's just my Instagram is just part of my day. And in many ways, I get as much out of my Instagram as the people watching me get out of it because I kind of started when I was living in Ballycotton, which is quite far out of the city. And I was quite, you know, I was a new mom and a bit lonely. And it was like an amazing outlet to feel like that there was people out there. But so I do it as part of my day. I think that's probably why I don't have a massive following because I don't do proper planned content and I don't do proper sketches. And it's really just me having the crack. And if I decide to pick up my phone and put it on the Instagram, fine. I think that's why anyone that is a member of my can I say what I call my
Go
followers?
on,
Can I
do. Go on, do.
they're the gangbang.
The
It happened by
I
accident.
don't. Go on, tell me why you call them that. I have to know now.
Well,
I have to ask.
one day I just said, hi, gang bang, and I got kind of hysterical at myself. And then they started referring to themselves as that. And then years later, somebody told me what it meant, and I was like,
Yeah.
what?
So does that
And
mean like they're like gangbangers? Is that what they are?
no, they're just,
Each person's a gangbanger.
no,
Did you
they're
get like a little
not.
badge or something, like a
They're
little,
not.
like a
We
welcome pack?
decided that I, because when I found out what it meant, I was like, oh my God, do we need to change it? And they were like, no, we're committed now. So my gang, any one of them that follows me is like, I feel hard fought. You know, we didn't go on any big viral journey. They're there because they get the shtick, but they
Yeah.
are quite a niche group. You know,
Yeah.
we're not talking, we haven't even hit 20K, which I think
Right.
is absolutely a disgrace. But like, as in, you know, they're there because they're not really there for me as a content creator. They're there because they're my friends.
Yeah,
They
so
certainly think they are my friends, and they
yeah.
are. Like, I
They're
do.
loyal gangbangers.
Exactly. They're. We're not changing our name now. We've been in this long enough.
Definitely not. Please never change
The
that name. Oh my
gang
God. We
bang.
better move off this topic. Right. Actually, do you find social media as a release, as an outlet for yourself? I
Oh
mean, you find
yeah.
yourself hilarious, obviously, but do you find it as a good release to do it?
Myself, I can sometimes I can come away from having looked at other people's stuff and I can notice different emotions. Like sometimes I'm delighted. Like if you know, if I look at someone like Tadhg Fleming, who I think is gas, you know, I enjoy that crack that's going on. Then I might look at somebody else and feel a bit, something has irked me. You know, when you come away from your phone and you're like, I'm annoyed, and I don't know why I'm annoyed. And sometimes
Just mute me, then. Just unfollow me.
I have to keep my eye on you.
Yeah.
No, but like sometimes I'm like, I'm annoyed. Why am I annoyed? And to my shame, a lot of the time it is professional jealousy that has annoyed me. You know, that I'm like, what's she doing that for now? Or why does she get that? Like there is that little competitive person in my soul still. You know, when I was acting, you'd always be raging like that somebody else got a part instead of you. And there is a bit of that. And obviously try to overcome that by being like, we all are where we're meant to be. And I do actually think that. But there's some days where I'm like, no, I'm raging now. She's got loads of followers and she doesn't deserve it. She doesn't deserve it. Like that's on a low day. Or there'd be something, you know, sometimes like if there's like a fitness type person, there wouldn't be many of them on my Instagram, but you know, somebody trying to shove some fitness
Your niece is
bollocks
doing
down
all
my
right.
throat. Do you know what I mean? Huh?
Your niece is doing all right.
My niece, who's Sinead? My comedy niece. She's lovely. She's amazing. She's not shoving it down my throat. I think sometimes I sometimes get a bit like panicky over people pushing stuff that I'm like, you're not an expert in this area. You know,
That drives me mad too, as well, actually, yeah.
something has happened to you that makes you think you're an expert in this area, but you're actually dangerous. You know, so like you do your fitness journey and I will do mine. And so sometimes I can come away from my phone feeling annoyed. And if I do, then I know that social media is not working for me on that particular moment.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I totally agree. You mentioned the fitness thing there, and I've seen you speak before about kind of body positivity and kind of like having a good relationship with food and that, which is obviously some two topics that I'm constantly obviously trying to promote as well. Where are you with that now? Where I am.
I very much feel like everybody is lovely. I don't, you know, people that are like, oh, I've been so bad there now, or like coming up to Christmas, oh, I was so bad. I had a pack of Maltesers. I think there's a lot of very damaging language around weight, we'll say in particular. And I think again that we have to slightly reprogram ourselves to certainly not do that demonizing of food. Oh, I'm so bad. I'm so good. I had a banana. Like, are you? Like, who cares? It's all just food a bit. But I think obviously as a woman, there'd be moments where I'm like, oh God, I'm just not feeling great now. You know, I've had the three babies. I'm obviously far bigger than I ever was when I was getting married or whatever. And there are days where you feel amazing and there are days where you feel shit and they're equally valid. But I think you have to, my big thing is like, you know, I have a chubby little tummy. So what? Who cares? Like, who decided that that was a bad thing? It's a lovely chubby little tummy. Do you know what I mean? I think you have to reprogram yourself a bit. And I'd often have like women saying to me, oh, I must get this done, or I got the Botox done, or whatever. Everyone do what you want to do. Like, if it makes you, if it's healthy and safe and it suits you, that's fine. But this striving to be thin, I think that mentality is what I've always had an issue with. I'm like, you're not more worthy. You're not more worthy of love or care or anything just because you're thin. Like, I don't care what size your arse is once your heart is big. I genuinely don't care. And I think, you know, like before and after pictures on Instagram and kind of, you know, what I eat in a day, all that shit, I'm just like, I don't know who that's for, and I don't know who it's benefiting. And I think it could actually probably be doing a lot of damage to
Oh, I do.
people.
I agree. I 100% agree.
You're sitting at home, you're seeing somebody doing what I eat in a day, and then it adds up to something like 1200 calories, and you're like, yeah, no wonder. Like
But
that might.
you don't see the rest of it.
No. And like there is massive genetic factors at play. So like if I want to lose 2 stone, and you want to lose 2 stone, our approach might be completely different. Like, as in, I just think there's an awful lot of misinformation. There's an awful lot of, like, a lot of stuff has been debunked. I have an issue always, and I came up against it in pregnancy with BMI as a way of measuring weight, such bollocks. But, like, it's still thrown out there. And I also have an issue with, like, medical people assuming that that your weight is the cause of everything. It's like, you know, stuff gets missed that way, and that's stupid. I just think there should be a lot less talk about that. I'm all for people being fit and healthy and active and all of that, but I think there should be no demonizing of any food. And I see it with my own kids. You know, one of them came home one day and she said somebody in her class, she's only in senior infants. No, sorry, that was, she was only in senior infants at the time. She's in second class now. Sorry, I just lost 2 years of my life. But somebody, some child in the class was telling her that white bread is bad. I said to her, I said, my darling, that child clearly has a mammy or a daddy who has some very dated thoughts. And I was like, that is just, that is, they are suffering as a result of, you know, the past diet culture. And I didn't get into all this with her, but I was like, you come to mammy if you want to hear about those kind of things, and I will explain everything to you. Because I do think people of my age in particular, we are suffering the ghosts of our past. The America's Next Top Model that told us, you know, if you had a gap in your teeth, that that was the worst thing in the world. The X Factor, where Simon Cowell is telling people that they're fat when they were like a size 14, 16. You know, we those ghosts are lined up behind us. So we have to, and they crop up every now and again. They crop up those thoughts of like, oh no, sure, I can't be on the deli because I'm a curvy girl. Like, as in, oh, it's we have to disentangle ourselves from years of it. And, you know, the women's magazines with the, like, Taylor Swift shows, you know, puts on a leggy display. The girl is just wearing a skirt. You know, like, we just have to. True. There's so much to try and get over. And I always feel like somebody is benefiting. If I'm sad about my body today, there is some businessman benefiting from that, because I'm signing up for some shit diet or some stupid regime that isn't appropriate for me. And there's some fella raking it in as a result of me feeling bad about myself. So I am an advocate for everyone trying to feel a bit better about themselves. And also, like, you've got a stomach, girl, get over it. 3 children came out of it, in my case. Do you know what I mean? Who cares? A small bit of flab. Who said it was manky? Like, there's pictures from years ago of ones, like, lying around huge, eating grapes and stuff, you know, artistic portraits. I'm like, why can't we be like them? Do you know?
Yeah, you're actually just, you're actually a Michelangelo. Yeah, sculpture, like, you know,
exactly. It would suit me. It would suit me to bring them back. But it's like, I just think anyone feeling really awful because of anything to do with how they physically look, I know it's a thing, but we need to readdress it. And for my kids, I'm not passing that on to my kids. No. I'm not letting them see me stand up on the scales and be sad. No way. Yeah. No way. They need, like, my little girl, she dances around the room in her nudes and she's all like, look at my tummy. And she's all delighted with herself. And I'm like, when did that stop? When did that stop for me? When did I stop? Like, so I get out of the shower and I jiggle, you know, I'm like, look at mommy's tummy. She's so strong. You came out of that tummy, blah, 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 blah. Because they need to see that, because we didn't see it because of, well, I'm going to blame Simon Cowell for it all. We didn't see it because of the shit. Like, imagine, do you remember the Swan program where people completely altered it? Oh my God. Oh, yeah. And I used to be bait into it. And I'd still watch it. But it's not good. It's not good for us.
Yeah. Did you see Cliff Richard's interview he did on, what's he call it?
This morning, Alison Hammond sitting on the couch opposite him. Is he for real? Now, I had a moment of pure rage with him. So obviously he said that he didn't get a picture with Elvis because Elvis was fat at the time, was basically what he said. I had a moment of pure rage, first of all, going, you ill-informed, stupid prick. And then I was like, well, what age is Cliff Richard? He is a product of his time as well. And he is a product of an industry that was like, you must be thin, you must be this, that, and the other. He's really thin at the moment. But he, like, as in, he can't escape his history at his age. You know, like, as in, he's nearly 80 or something. Like, we can't fix him. We're not going to fix him. We might fix me. we might fix my kids. Do you know what I mean? We have to accept that the damage has been done, I think, to a certain generation, but we have to take back the control now. So like, you know, I had relatives that used to poke me and say, she was after getting, oh, you're after getting very plump. Oh my God, my granny said that to me when I was very, very young. Like, you know, my mom and dad didn't stand for that shit. And they told her not to be saying that. So they took back a bit of control. And now I can take back a bit more control. And then my kids will take back more. So I'm like, you can have that opinion, Cliff. You're crazy. And but thankfully, the reaction to it has basically been, how dare he? So that's good.
Yeah.
You know, it's and poor Alison. Alison's sitting there going, oh, is that why I never got invited to your house? And she's amazing. She's amazing. The least interesting thing about Alison is her weight. The most interesting thing about her is everything else. She's amazing.
Yeah.
She's fun. She's witty. She's clever. She's so on for the crack. Like, literally, if I was describing Alison, I wouldn't be like, oh, you know, I wouldn't mention her weight. I'd be like, you know, that amazing one from the Bake Off. She's such a laugh. She was on Big Brother. She's gas. Like,
yeah. But why does that have to be a thing anyway? Like,
why?
I mean,
why?
Exactly.
Who cares?
Like, you know, who can cares? People not just say Alison without going,
yeah,
mentioning something about her? That's like it just, it's, it doesn't make any sense to me. But like, yeah,
she takes, what I like about her is what I like about people is people who take up their space in the world. Like, why are we all spending time trying to be small or shrink ourselves? Take up your full space. I don't care how big or small that is, just take it up, be your full self as much as humanly possible, and the rest will come then. If at least just try and always be yourself, not your best version of yourself, whatever version of yourself you are in that moment.
Just your authentic self.
Space. Yeah, just take up your space. Don't be trying to hide yourself or apologizing. You can easily get into that kind of like, oh God, I've put on a lot of weight now since having the baby. Yeah, I had a baby 9 weeks ago. The least of my worries is my size or shape. My main worry is keeping him alive.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
that's
yeah,
the
exactly.
phase of life we're at. And, and this notion of, oh, I'll get myself right. You are right. You are right already. You don't have, there's no future perfect self that's going to be right. And does right equal skinny? If it does, fuck off.
That's the clip. That's the trailer.
Very ranty.
Oh, that's the trailer, 100%. Oh, fuck. Oh Christ. Well, look, I completely agree with you. It is a generational thing. It 100% is a generational thing. Even my kids' grandparents make comments to them that, and I'm like, oh, and you can't say that. And they're like, what? And they don't think anything of it. And I'm like, you can't say that. And then the other, like the BMI thing, I'm not even going to start on that. And I actually, just as you said that, I think I should do an episode on that.
Yeah.
I probably should actually, because, I probably will. And then
it's
the other
bollocks.
Exactly. That's going to be the name of the episode.
Yeah, so, BMI is bollocks.
That's what the B stands for. Go
when
on.
Even at the end of my at the end of my pregnancy, you go back to your consultant for a chat. So that was fine. He's a lovely man. We were having a lovely chat. But at the end of it, he said, and just be careful with the weight. And I was like, sorry, excuse me, what?
Wow.
And he instantly saw my face and was like, in general, that's a general thing. But I was like, I have had, thanks be to God, the healthiest pregnancy, the absolute most straightforward C-section you ever saw in your life, and a beautiful, healthy baby at it. Why are we still talking as if my weight somehow impacted the pregnancy? It didn't.
Yeah.
So like, I think the medical profession need to be careful as well, because it's like, is there a need to say this when I'm literally a poster child for pregnancy? Maybe you should be telling people to be more like my shape. Do you know? Because it worked. I was able, like, the reason I had a C-section is nothing to do with my weight. It's just to do with the fact that I had to have C-section.
Yeah.
So it's like, why are you still mentioning it? There's no need. There is absolutely no need. I think what you mean to say, my friend, is didn't you have a very healthy pregnancy and didn't you carry that baby very safely? Yes, I did. Was it anything to do with my weight? No. Right. So, and more often than that, stuff gets missed.
And actually, that's a perfect segue into the other thing I was going to mention that you mentioned that I completely agree with, which is something I didn't really think about until later on in life, was genetics.
Mm. Yeah.
So for so long, as you know, like I, you know, hit away. I didn't like myself, all that type of stuff. And I was only, well, obviously I've been doing a lot of work, but when genetics was mentioned to me and obviously I knew what genetics was, but I mean, yeah. when I started to think about it, when it comes to like your body shape and how you might put on weight, lose weight, how your body mm-hmm. reacts to certain things, I think that was really like another light bulb over my head moment. I was like, yeah, Jesus Christ, fuck, like that's actually makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
And it's exactly what you're just saying there. It's nothing to do with your weight. It's to do with your body as a whole. It's the genetics, really, you know?
100%. Like, as in, I am, in personality, I am like my mom and I am like my dad, right? Because I have characteristics that they have from both being around them and also them being my parents. And equally, I have physical traits that are theirs. My dad is a large man, a large, lovely man, right? And I have his genetics. So I'm not going to be some skinny millings unless I do myself immense damage. Do you know what I mean? Mm. Like, unless I absolutely go completely against my body type. I look like my mother. I look at my little girl. She has the exact same shape as me. And I'm like, girl, you are going to be a curvy girl and we're going to love it. Because, like, you cannot escape your genetics. Just like the same way that if there's a hereditary condition, there's a likelihood that you will have it.
Yep.
And that's, it's not spoken about. And instead, people are demonized for, you know, like as being lazy or, you know, as you obviously be eating all the time or whatever. That is all nonsense that needs to be put to bed once and for all. This, both the quest for skinniness and also this notion that anyone who has weight is in some way some sort of glutton. Like, it's just not the case. I'm an extremely active person who just happens to have massive boobs and a tummy. Do you know what I mean? So what? So what? I could make a fortune on OnlyFans. Do you know what I mean? So it's like a fortune, but it's like
the gangbang queen. That's gang your name.
But it's like, it's just, you have to vocalize. People have to vocalize this more often because the old dated tropes keep getting trotted out, and it's like, particularly with BMI, it's like that has been debunked for ages. It has its place somewhere, but it's not a deciding factor for, like, when you consider that some of the greatest athletes in the world, their BMI would classify them as being obese.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, that's madness. These people are like pinnacles of health and fitness, and yet they're falling into that category. And it's the same as like the BMI is a bit like, you know, when you have a new baby and the public health nurse comes and they do the chart about their weight, their height and their head. I found out that chart is the same the world over. So all of my babies have massive heads because we are Celts. So we are being compared to like people in Asia, people in Africa, people in America. It's the same chart.
I didn't know that.
It makes no sense. Makes no sense because it's like Irish people's heads are bigger, like because of our descendants.
Well, cultures are different as well. Like,
So it's like, it's the same for me. It's like, you cannot use BMI you cannot put me and a whole load of other people in that same category of BMI because you have to take in all factors. So like, it's fine as a general indicator, but essentially it's bollocks. And I do think people are beaten. Like, even if I got like at my very skinniest, my BMI was still saying I was obese. Do you know what I mean?
Wow,
at my skinniest, right. At the size that I struggled to get to before my wedding. Do you know what I mean? Even that, why did I need to be skinny for my wedding? Bollocks. But you have to unlearn it all. Because it's just been in the public domain for so long. Like, sure, that was the bridalplasty. Do you remember that?
No.
Bridalplasty was a bit like the swan, except they were brides and they used to compete against each other to win various challenges, and then they could get plastic surgery. So like, if I won one, I could get my nose done, and if I won the next one, I could get my jaw done. And I watched that, I'd say, when I was about 14 or 15. Yeah, I mean, amazing. It was a great show. They all had war, but the essential message is shambolic.
Yes. Win a prize and change the way you look.
Yeah, and for your wedding. For your wedding.
Oh, for your wedding, yeah, of course.
Specifically bridalplasty. Awful, awful,
right.
Awful.
Right, let's move on. I can't deal with that. Jesus Christ. we're running low on time. Actually, I think we're over time, so we'll wrap this up soon.
Perfect.
Obviously, you do a lot of stand-up comedy. We talked about kind of, you know, doing your own stuff as a release for you, but do you get, like, really anxious going on stage, or does the nerves kick in, or kind of anxiety kick in afterwards, or how does it work for you?
No, I get small letter at the start of anxiety. I wouldn't, right. You know, it's nerves. And I think that's important to differentiate, because I think a lot of people kind of have taken the word anxiety and ran with it. And I think there is a difference between people that genuinely suffer with anxiety, capital A, and people that are nervous. Of course, I'm nervous before I go on stage. I'm on the toilet for the day. I'm very ratty with my husband and my kids. We've learned that it's better for me to head off. If it's a big gig, make sure she's gone early in the day, because she's going to be an absolute demon around the place.
No.
But then the minute the gig is done, it's elation. Like, as you're about to go on, you're like, why do I do this?
Yeah.
I hate this. They're going to hate my new stuff. Okay. Why are you a stand-up, you stupid, stupid woman? And then you go and do it. And afterwards, it's like, you're amazing. You're a queen. You were born to do this. Why would you do anything else? And then the cycle starts again, the next gig again.
Oh, okay. That's
how it is.
That's pretty, because, like, I suppose, like, there's like a healthy nervous, and that's what your body trying to protect you.
Exactly.
That's fine, you know.
It protects you, it keeps you safe, and it makes sure that you know your lines. You know what I mean? I think nerves will make sure that I deliver the jokes. Anxiety would cripple you to the point of not being able to perform. I haven't, thankfully, have not experienced that. But I do think there are people that refer to themselves as having anxiety when what they actually have is nerves. And I think they probably do a disservice to people that genuinely suffer with anxiety. There's a huge difference. You know, an anxiety attack is hugely different.
Of them.
Hugely different from feeling nervous. Feeling nervous is like unpleasant, but you know the reason, you know it's about to subside the minute you go on stage. You know it in many ways, nerves are quite healthy for nerves are showing that you kind of care.
Yeah.
Whereas
I think it's that's exactly what it is. I think it's only when you actually experience anxiety, you'll know the difference, because they're not even the same.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think, go on.
I don't think people are purposely kind of hijacking the term. I do think that they think they have massive anxiety, but actually, if they had a full panic attack, then they would know the reality is that they are maybe struggling with nerves, or maybe anxious.
They're just probably just not educated enough as well, and to know what the difference is. I mean, like, I was diagnosed with generalized anxiety disorder in 2016, and like it, you said, it fucking crippled you, and it's not pleasant.
Yeah.
Now it's kind of like, as you said, now I know the difference, and kind of like nerves and protect, you know, it protects you, and your nervous system kicking it. That's education as well. It's kind of, you know, kind of being a bit more self-aware as well.
Yeah, and I think, you know, for people that don't have to deal with it, great. You know, great for you to be uneducated about it. You don't have to go there. Like, as in, I'm very lucky that I do just experience nerves, and they are very normal and very healthy. But I have friends that have been unable to perform at gigs because they've been so shook. And like, that's when you realize the difference. And I think a lot of people that are drawn to the arts are also people that do suffer with various different, like, mental health, you know, situations. And I don't know, there's definitely a link there between an artistic soul and a soul who struggles. I think that can
100%.
Yeah, of course.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah, yeah. And like, as in, my artistic soul is, I'm lucky that for the most part, I'm an artistic soul, but I'm also like kind of practical or something. So, you know, I don't think I was ever, like, I did drama and theatre studies, and I think about halfway through the first day, I realized, oh, I'm not as artistic a soul as I think I am.
Oh, okay.
Because, you know, there could be a lot of a lot of soul searching and stuff goes on in a drama and theater workshop, and I'm like, oh, I kind of just want to be in plays. I just wanted to be in Les Mis, and I was like, oh no, nobody else here wants to do that. Okay, fine. maybe this isn't for me.
Yeah.
But I think very lucky to not suffer with an anxiety around it, just normal nerves. But you definitely have to accept that you don't have anxiety if you just have nerves. You know, it's just nerves.
Yeah, no, that's it. Because as we said, you'll know the difference once you have the difference.
Yeah, exactly. Surprise, but, this is what anxiety is.
Surprise.
You were nervous, my friend.
Yeah. Right, we're nearly done. How did you find doing the morning show on the radio? Were your early mornings, were they hard?
I loved doing it. I really loved doing it. I had a rule that, so obviously we used to be in for kind of just before 7, and then we would do 7 a.m. to 9. I had a rule in place that none of us would express that we were tired, because there's no crack in that. You know, conversation ends when somebody says they're tired. How are you today? Tired? Oh, okay. Like, I've nothing else to say to you now. So we put that rule in place. Because you have to be happy clappy. Breakfast radio is like, oh my god, guys, good morning, how's it going, can you believe they've got the Christmas boxes in the shop already and it's August, you know, that's breakfast radio in a nutshell. So you have to be, you know, you have to be a kind of heightened version of yourself, certainly in the way breakfast radio has gone. I don't think you have to be that, but it has kind of been the way it's gone. I think that really helped us all to not have to be to not say we're tired. So you just have to go and be on. One of the hardest things about it, though, is no immediate reaction, really. Like, you get text messages into the show. But I had to say, when we come out of the studio in the morning, everybody else is only just starting their day. We've been up for 3 hours.
Yeah.
Everybody else is only starting their day. I had to say to people, you're going to have to, like, give us a clap or something when we come out, because I need the reaction. So it was a very weird, you know, you go from stand-up where the reaction is immediate to really not knowing. You've just put your whole heart and soul into 3 hours of radio. You know, you've told personal stories. You've kind of really opened yourself up to the public, but you don't know. You don't know. Like, you're in people's cars, but people aren't really stopping to tell you that was great, that was very funny. So
true.
I found that quite difficult. And then it was difficult when it ended. You know, it didn't end the way we wanted to.
Okay.
We would have happily stayed on air for another, you know, another few years. Look, it's business. It's radio business. Radio is really, really cutthroat. We all moved on and are fine. But it was very upsetting when it came to an end. And we did. That was probably the closest to heartbroken I ever was.
Wow.
So yeah, my beloved colleague, Rob Heffernan, was fired, and then I left as a result. Major drama. Clearly you haven't listened to our podcast that talks all about this.
I was gonna get to that.
But that's what happened in a nutshell. And now he was fired because they were going with somebody else, they were bringing somebody else in.
Right.
But it's just cutthroat. Radio is really, really ruthless. And I think I knew that, but it didn't sit right with me then. You know, I think there was a desire for me to stay, but I said no, because I'm like, basically, you fired my friend. So I'm like, no, I'm not going to stay, because I'm not a corporate soul, and I'm not going to kind of... I'm not going to inhabit a world that I'm not happy to inhabit, you know, when stuff like that is happening. So but it was brutal, very upsetting.
Yeah. Well, you moved on with the new podcast, Rob. I was going to mention, I haven't forgotten about it.
Yes. So Hell Hath No Fury, Like a Woman and an Olympian Scorned. I'd only worked with Rob when he came to the radio show. We did maybe 18 months together, and we just got on like a house on fire. And so then when it was a house on fire, when Rob got let go, then the plan was, you know, we can't give up on this. There is something special there. And there's also you know, possibly a kind of unique enough situation, like in that we're platonic besties who both have other partners. You know, there's no romantic thing there. You know, I think there's a lot of two men doing a podcast. There's a lot of two women doing a podcast. There's a lot of two gay men doing a podcast, and there isn't many male female.
I got
Yeah. Well, how dare you? How dare you have multiple podcasts? But there isn't many. It's definitely a
No.
minority.
Yeah.
And I think it's an interesting take. And as well, in mine and Rob's case, like obviously Rob is a 5-time Olympic athlete, and I am, you know, a stand-up comedian. Like our worlds are very different,
Yeah.
you know, our backgrounds are very different, and our kind of values and stuff are the same. So yeah, we've got Red Raw, it's called.
Yeah,
A nice little
no,
sting in that
yeah,
tail.
thought
And
that.
the first episode details how we met, and then the rest we move on then, because we wouldn't change how we met. You know, it was a great time in our lives. It was ended too early. But that's life, you know. We're not bitter about it. That's just what happens, and it's just work. It's just the rootless kind of entertainment industry is rootless,
Well, it's
and
just another chapter in yours and Rob's story,
exactly.
really, just moved on.
And
And
I think the podcast is better suited to us because we're totally free. We can say what we like. You know, Breakfast Radio, you are very restricted because it is in the morning. There are kids in the car. You can't say various bits and bobs. Whereas, like in the podcast, it's like. I think the first couple of episodes, it's like, my God, we can say what we like. There's a great sense of freedom in that. We're probably better suited to that. You know, radio as well,
yeah.
it's like you've got the longest you'll get to talk in Breakfast Radio is 2.5 minutes. And sure, like,
Wow.
what could you fit into 2.5 minutes? Nothing.
Yeah,
Nothing
true.
no anymore. Dua Lipa.
Or Dua Lipa. What's it? Right, we have to end this. Right. We've covered just about everything. We've talked about your podcast. Do you, everyone, obviously you can get on Spotify and Apple Podcasts,
Yeah,
all the usual
wherever you get your
places.
podcast. Yeah.
Yeah. What about yourself? Do you want to give anything a plug before we go?
Oh no, she's still on maternity leave. The Improv Panto is coming up in the Cork Opera House. That's about it. That's about all I'm doing now between now and I'd say the middle of next year. She's
Right.
on sabbatical. She's minded the
Right.
babies for a while,
Okay.
and she's reinventing.
Right.
But the podcast is the main one. She's obviously going to have a massively huge global podcast. That's what we're aiming for.
Yeah, that's exactly. Yeah. Well, look,
Yeah.
I thank you very much for giving up your global superstar time to me for about an
You
hour or so.
just got in before the global superstar. You'll be the last one. You'll be the
I will
last
be
one,
the
peeps.
last one. I hope I've hit record on this one, so.
That'll be €600.
Brah, no brah. I did take a check.
Revolute me.
I will revolute you. I will, no problem. Right, let's get out of here. Laura,
Sound.
thank you so much for
Thanks a million.
giving up your time. See you later.
Bye.
Bye.